Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Greetings and welcome to the Eastern Border. On our first episode of February, we have a special guest here, John Christmas, the author of the KGB Banker book, an established scholar of our region with close ties to it. And when I read about him at first, I was quite surprised because his story is something that I truly believe needs to be shared to the wider world, and it impacts quite a lot more than us who just live here in the Eastern Border. So, welcome to the show, John.
Hello, Christops. Thank you for inviting me to the show. I believe that I do have something to contribute because there are things going on the Eastern Border which people do not know about because they're not in the mainstream media.
Well, as far as I understand, this whole study is going to be about the bank, a part of which I still am forced to use in my everyday dealings as well. So, as far as I know, you have been tied to the Podex affair and everything that happened there. Let's first explain what the official story was and what's the Podex timeline and why does it matter?
Okay, the timeline, I mean, this goes for years, but Latvia, or supposedly the Soviet Union, broke up. Latvia became an independent country. However, a suspicious thing happened, which were that dozens of banks sprung up in Latvia, which seemed to support the KGB, that the people from the KGB, who used to be, you know, the secret police, set up a network of banks, not only a network of banks, but a network of tens of thousands of shell companies. The banks were in Latvia, but the shell companies were registered in whichever countries had the lowest disclosure requirements. And suddenly, hundreds of billions of dollars were like flowing around between the accounts of these banks. So this is a thing which previous journalists have called the Latvian proxy network, which still exists today. But that is something which needs to be discussed openly because it affects democracy in Latvia.
So what was your role in all of this kind of study, and how did you end up at Podex in the first place? So I understand you were working there for a while.
Well, my story is that I'm from the United States. I'm half Latvian. I went to fancy universities in the United States. I worked for two banks in the United States. I moved to Latvia to get back to my roots and to be involved in the rejuvenation of the country. And I got recruited to Podex, that the people at Podex said that, hey, we're also making Latvia better. And, you know, there's a lot of slander going around in the media about how we're the mafia and we're criminals and so forth. And if we have a Western person like you to meet the Western banks, that we'll be able to expand our activities. And therefore, we'd like to hire you, and it'd be a good thing for Latvia also. That's what I was told.
Well, about the reputation, I mean, during the 90s, one of their advertising slogans was, "We are closer than Switzerland," which, Now, looking back at it is kind of ironic if you think about it.
Well, sure. I mean, I understand there were a lot of bad things going on in the 90s. I mean, about like stealing people's houses, that they had a normal business of making mortgage loans where you would make a down payment on your house and get a mortgage loan from them. And then they would just transfer the title of the house to themselves. It didn't matter if you made the payments or not. And that they would do this just to steal your house and other things as well. I actually save clips. People send me messages all the time about how they had thugs and assassins like beating people and killing people. I save like all the messages I receive about this. But I understand they were not a normal bank.
Well, they seem to be presenting themselves as a purely Latvian bank. And as we had bank issues before, well, it was a bit weird. How did your work impact the bank and what did you do there? Did you actually manage to improve its reputation, or did you notice that something bad was happening right away, or was it built up slowly?
Good question. Okay, so I started at the bank. Another thing happened around the same time, which is that the political party, Jaunais Laiks, was established, which later became Vienotība and now is called Jauna Vienotība. But anyway, I started at the bank. I met a bunch of people. I've met almost every former prime minister and president of the country because they all come to the bank parties. And then through this Jauna Vienotība, I met Einars Repše and I met Kristijanas Kariņš. And they were on this pledge that they were going to fight against corruption, that finally the corruption that has taken over Latvia is going to be smashed because this Jauns Laiks party is going to smash it.
Yes, those are their promises.
Yes. So anyway, I knew Kristijanas Kariņš. Actually, I was connected to him already through the American Latvian community. And his wife I knew also because she was a doctor in Riga. She was actually my doctor. And I, through the process of working at Parks Bank and attending meetings inside Parks Bank, determined that the bank was a pyramid fraud, that they were making loans to related parties. Now, making loans to related parties is the same as embezzlement. It means that you're transferring the depositor money to yourself, to some offshore company. And normally this is considered to be a very serious fraud and a very serious criminal thing to transfer the money out from a bank. And anyway, I gave all this information to Kristijanas Kariņš, etc.
I also read that Paraks had some dealings with Ernst & Young and Enron just before the collapse of Enron in 2002 as well, apparently. Is this tied to this?
Okay, with Enron, I can say a few things. There's a fraud that was the cover-up fraud that was signed by Valdis Dombrovskis regarding the Parex collapse, which I have compared in articles for years to the Enron fraud. That fraud is where Valdis Dombrovskis signed a deal to sell a stake in Parex Bank to the EBRD, the European Bank for Reconstruction and Development, for 80 million euros. That deal was supposed to prove that that stake was actually worth 80 million euros. However, it turned out that it was a fake deal because a report got leaked out later that Latvia had to reverse that deal for a higher amount of money, except kept the reversion secret. So this is the kind of accounting that Enron was doing. So it's not that Parex was related to Enron, but their accounting was the same. You say that something is worth 80 million euros. It's actually worth 0 euros. And the way that you maintain the fiction that it's worth 80 million euros is you pay somebody to buy it for 80 million euros, but the purchase is like public, but the reversion is secret.
Oh, so you basically make someone buy your bank for these 80 million euros so that it would look like it's 80 million euros, and then you secretly buy it back so that you've basically just purchased legitimacy of your statement that it costs something.
It's called buying a name or selling a name. In the case of the EBRD, which is supposed to be an altruistic organization fixing democracy in Eastern Europe, I mean, you can see how well they fixed democracy by looking at Belarus or Turkey or Azerbaijan or Kazakhstan to see how well they've been doing to fix democracy. That this organization came in, basically they covered up for 5 years that the bank had been looted so that the people who looted the bank were not prosecuted. But this is a fraud, according to Enron or according to history, where when Enron was doing this to make their earnings temporarily seem better by selling something, and then it turned out that they didn't really sell it because they really had a secret reversion in the price. This is exactly what the Vinotinto party did, what Dombrovskis did and Karnes did. And the two other names I'll give are the two other people who I gave the original whistleblowing to, Repshe and Repshevich. All of them know that Parx was looted, and they paid the EBRD to pretend to buy a stake in Parx.
All right, and then it was looted by whom? I've read some accusations about the ties of this money going to St. Petersburg-based Russian mafia, really, even that criminal, which is interesting these days since everyone right now is trying to cut funds for such organized crime and corruption. But I've read some scary accounts on people saying that Parx and also investigated ABLV Bank, that they are connected to this Russian mafia, Tambovskaya one in St. Petersburg, yeah.
Okay, so this Tambovskaya mafia in St. Petersburg, somehow it was the springboard for Vladimir Putin to take over Russia. Somehow also it was connected to Latvia and connected to the banks and connected to the, you could say, Russian intelligence, because it's a characteristic of Russian intelligence that they link themselves to organized crime. They go around the world, not just to Latvia. They go around the world, they meet the organized crime bosses, and they connect themselves together with the organized crime bosses, which means getting involved with everything, not just corruption and stealing money from banks and governments. It means trafficking narcotics, trafficking sex slaves, selling weapons to rogue warlords, all the stuff that they do. The Tambovskaya Mafia apparently got in connection with Parx Bank, and Parx Bank was doing the money laundering. And there are certain individual people who, I don't know if you want to name them or else they might sue you for putting them on the webcast, but there are certain people who are organized crime bosses linked to Putin who received large loans from Parx, which they did not pay back, which the loans were designed so that they did not have to pay them back. I mean, they weren't really loans. They like sent $100 million to somebody who didn't have to pay it back.
Oh, wow. And so you blew the whistle on this whole thing. And why then did we, at the end, have to bail out Parx from our taxpayer money? Because everyone was really sad about that for a while. And how did the Europe react to all this situation? How did the investigation go?
Well, the whole thing was a disaster. So there were Latvian people, of course, who realized that this was a heist, that the reason the government was giving billions of euros to Parx must be corruption. And Ivars Gudmanis was saying that the reason for this is because the United States caused Parx Bank to collapse. This was not true at all. And then there was this riot where it started with an anti-corruption protest in Riga and ended with people attacking the Parx offices and attacking the Saima as well. Those people understood that the government was lying to them. I mean, the United States had nothing to do with this. It was the money was stolen by people, criminals connected to Vladimir Putin. And the United States had nothing to do with this. And most of the deposits at Parx were shell companies from shell companies originated in the rep offices in Russia and Ukraine. And there wasn't really a reason for the Latvian government to repay the money, except possibly the hypothetical reason that the entire Latvian government was receiving bribes from the criminals.
Hello there. Thank you for tuning in into another episode of The Eastern Border. We are so happy to announce that this episode is brought to you by our friends at russansov.com. If you're looking to buy new art, don't forget to use the code EasternBorder for a discount on us. Remember, head over to russansov.com and happy shopping. If, however, you want to support our show directly, head over to patreon.com or our website, theeasternborder.lv, to find out how you can help out. For all things Eastern Border, don't forget to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Discord. And as always, thank you so much for supporting us. We really appreciate each and every one of you. That's all from me now. See you online.
This podcast brought to you by RussianVoiceovers.eu. Enjoy.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit energycitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
So there was basically no reason to split off Parex into, I don't know what they're called now. And there was this talk about splitting Parex into two, with one part being Citadele, which is still operating today as a regular bank. And then there's the other part. We were told that it was the good investments and the bad investments. They have been now split off and some sort of manipulations there. I'm not really strong with finances. So could you explain how this splitting up happened and was it necessary even?
Well, the splitting up was done in a worse way than how you describe it. Now, in other countries that in 2008 were hit by the financial crisis and they had some banks that failed, some of the countries created a good bank and a bad bank, which is sort of what Latvia did. But Latvia did it with some important differences. Now, I understand that the personnel and the clients from the old Parex Bank moved mostly to 3 different banks. One bank is Citadele, which is the official, like, good bank survivor from Parex. Another bank was Ukio Bank in Lithuania, which processed bribes that apparently went to Vladimir Putin, and the assets were stolen from that bank as well. And there were even people from Parex who were involved in that. Another bank was ABLV Bank in Latvia, Aizkrauklis Banka, which received a lot of people from Parex, received a lot of customers from Parex, apparently organized the looting of Ukraine and the looting of Moldova, and facilitating the North Korean nuclear weapons effort. All of that also involving people from Parex and accounts, clients from Parex who moved from Parex to ABLV Bank. That's where I see that the bank changed.
Oh, well, this is a lot to take in, really. So how did you move through this? Did you follow the whole process closely? And what happened to you after, you know, blowing whistle on such weird dealings and strangeness?
Well, people send me information all the time. I mean, it causes a lot of stress to me, and I wouldn't be adverse to being removed from the whole process and not being involved with it at all anymore. But the thing is since the whistleblowing, giving the information to the government, where the government decided to, instead of use the information to save money, they decided to fight against me to cover up the information by spending money to bail out the criminals. It turned out very different from how I thought. But nobody has ever, in all the years that have gone by, sent me a message that said that, John, you're wrong. And here is, like, information which shows that the fake deals that you think happened did not really happen and so forth. Instead, I keep getting more supporters, people who say that, listen, you did not even know the beginning of the crimes at Parex, that Parex was involved in this and this and this and this, and that there were even more criminal things happening that I didn't even know about. So I've become this, like, repository where people are sending me all this information about all these crimes, all this money stolen, and, you know, nobody investigates it, but I just put it up online.
I also worry about because I watched one of your videos on YouTube, and there you spoke about some weird things happening in EU where they changed the law to make operation that was illegal legal later on or something.
Oh, well, this is something also. You catch everything, so I'm very happy that you have researched into this, because there are some weird things happening where you wonder, you know, if Vladimir Putin controls the entire European Union. So the person who signed the deal to sell a stake in Parex Bank to the EBRD for 80 million euros was Valdis Dombrovskis. Now, he was at that time the prime minister of Latvia. So ever since it's been revealed that this was a fake deal, that actually he paid them 198 million euros in order to pay 80 million euros to buy the stake, so it was a fake privatization, he's been somehow super successful in the European Union. He is now the European Commission Executive Vice President, and he is in charge of, they have these titles which are so beautiful, like equality and ethics and so forth. And now he's in charge of the anti-money laundering for the European Union. So how can a person who has set up this fraudulent deal to help Vladimir Putin's money laundering bank falsely cover up the looting, then he suddenly becomes the head of anti-money laundering for the European Union? I mean, this is something that people should investigate for sure. It should be in the media for sure. And it's not just speculation. I mean, he signed that deal. It's on YouTube. Clear evidence is that he signed that deal, and that deal was fake. So why is he at the top of the European Union now?
Seems kind of interesting, really. This gives me a much deeper look at all of our politicians, which we have had issues for a while now, since sadly we haven't had any prime ministers who wouldn't be involved in some sort of a scandal or another. Do you think that somehow the Latvian people get our money back that was spent on saving Parex, or that we can somehow salvage some of this going forward? Do you have any advice on what our government should do, maybe, that we should, I don't know, petition for them to do?
Well, I do have advice. I am a Latvian citizen, and I am patriotic about Latvia, and I'm very sad about the extreme corruption which has taken over the government for the past 30 years, which is supposed to be a happy time of freedom, but instead has been a time of corruption. A very obvious thing that Latvia could do, and this has been, the information has been out for 12 years already, to sue the European Bank for Reconstruction and Development to give back the money that they stole. So that institution, by making this deal with Valdis Dombrovskis to pretend to buy a stake in Parex Bank, which really they didn't because it got reversed back later, that has set up a huge fraud which has protected the oligarchy in Latvia for years longer, caused Latvians to lose tons of money because they could have not only the money they paid to the EBRD for that fake transaction, but also the money that got stolen from Parex. A lot of things can be revealed from that. And in fact, not only for Latvia, but also for other countries as well. There's a lot of really important things that can be done if anybody in the Latvian government will complain that the EBRD screwed Latvia, which they did.
So why do you think no one's really working on this? I mean, are they afraid of Putin's mafia? Are they afraid of their ties to it? Do they have such ties? It seems weird. I mean, if you look at some sort of at least opposition candidates who would want to come into the office and solve the situation, you would think that this would be kind of a weapon of theirs, right? They could come in and at least, you know, run for office saying that they will look into this matter and that they will complain to the European Commission and stuff.
Well, I would think so. I mean, the stories that I hear are so wild that they're like beyond what I almost can imagine. Latvian people routinely send me messages. I get a message almost every week from a different person about this, that listen, the Russian government is threatening to kill the entire Latvian government, and the Latvian government needs to surrender to the Russian government because they have no choice. And this is part of the Parex bailout. I, anyway, would say that, for example, with a particular person like Kristijanas Karinč, who knows about this from the beginning, and I know him and I know his wife, that he should not be afraid to talk about this openly. He's a United States citizen. He could even go to the United States if he thinks he's going to get killed if he stays in Latvia. He apparently, his wife received 6 million euros from an associate of Vladimir Putin after my whistleblowing, which he participated in covering up. So this makes me wonder, like, okay, so he is American and he's Latvian and he's got 6 million euros to his wife from Vladimir Putin, that this is the sort of thing that he could have, if he's getting threatened, if this was not voluntary that he made this deal, but this was like a matter of death threats, that he could call the United States government and go back to the United States and get protection there to tell the truth about what's happening to Latvia.
Yeah, this whole thing makes me wonder a lot because, for one, we have gotten in trouble with Putin's regime quite a lot and because of our show, and we've done quite a bit of reporting about what he's doing, and it seems kind of sad that our own government is involved in this whole situation.
Oh, okay, I can say things about how it's been turned around, the story. From my perspective, some of it is from the American Latvian community.
Okay, yeah, please do.
So, of course, about 10% of the Latvian people in the entire world are in America because of the end of the war that, yes, 10% of the population ran away and they went to the United States. But there's this American Latvian population. They believe that Krishan Skornj is on their side because, you know, because he's American, he's Latvian also. But they don't seem to really understand what's actually going on. And this whole mafia of moving, apparently the amount of money is something like $100 billion per year through these shell companies at these fraudulent banks, is somehow the core of the Putin regime, that the Putin regime is about maintaining this mafia system where there are certain billionaires who have huge amounts of money and they try to undermine all the countries around the world. This has all been sort of done through Latvia and through the Latvian banks, and the American Latvians don't seem to realize this, and they can't believe that their country is on the same side with Putin. So this is something shocking.
Well, I'm just going to recommend everyone listening to this show to go and check out more information by John. But, well, this has been a lot of information. But please, we still have some minutes going forward. So if you like, you can talk about your book. What's the KGB Banker about?
Yeah, I'll talk about a few things which I have. There's a website which I started years ago called lawlesslatvia.com. That website is not managed by myself anymore. There's a different Latvian activist who manages that website now. But that has a lot of articles about things which often are not mentioned in the Latvian media, which are about corruption in Latvia. There's another thing which is on YouTube called Latvia v. EBRD. So the EBRD, the European Bank for Reconstruction and Development, is one of the biggest enemies in Latvia, ironically, because it's supposed to be helping democracy in Latvia. But that YouTube channel, Latvia v. EBRD, has explanations of the fraud, how Parex and the government ripped off the Latvian people. Then another thing, the most recent thing, which I'm most excited about, is the KGB Banker thriller novel. So together with a co-author, William Burton McCormick, who published a previous novel that was very popular in Latvia called Lenin's Harem, together with him, we came up with a novelization. It's not with the same names and so forth as the real story, but inspired by the real story of the looting of Parex Bank and the cover-up of the looting of Parex Bank, we have this book out called KGB Banker, which is available on Amazon.
Well, this is going to be an amazing ride. Do you predict something actually will change and how it actually might change for us? Do you think that we actually can elect someone who will take care of the situation and do something? Or does the generation need to change, or is everyone involved?
Well, it seems like there's going to be a war is one thing that seems. I mean, the EBRD, it makes not only these fake investments in Latvia, it makes in Belarus, Turkey, Kazakhstan, in these other countries, Azerbaijan as well. I mean, you could say that the entire region of Russia and Kazakhstan and Azerbaijan and Turkey and Belarus and Ukraine, all these countries which are touched by this development bank – are going to have a big war. I mean, this is the direction that we're going toward. I mean, I would prefer that it would not go in the direction of having a war, but rather we would just, in a civilized way, shut down this development bank, announce all the fake privatization deals that it's been involved with, and to defund it. And that would be a way to solve the problem. And then, of course, a big problem is just Putin and Russia and what is going to happen with Putin and Russia. I mean, it's a nightmare, of course, that Russia became a free country and their leader became a mobster. This Putin is not a democratic leader. He's a mobster. And where is that going to lead? I don't know. It can't last forever. I mean, he's a human, so we'll see.
Well, for the first time ever, as we noticed, because I watched also his New Year's speech, for the first time ever, he was actually wearing a bulletproof vest under his coat in this year. This is surprising.
Aha. And I think there's a few different ones of him also. I mean, they say as well that the person who you were watching might not have been him because maybe it was a double.
I for sure am certain that he definitely has some body doubles, and because I made an episode about it a while ago, and that got me on the Russia's troll list. But well, I think it was a year ago when he supposedly gave a speech in Crimea, and then 2 hours later in Vladivostok, and there is literally zero planes on planet Earth which Russia owns that can make the trip.
That's exactly. No, it's, you know, how this Vladimir Putin has taken over half of the world is a very sad story, but hopefully Latvia can shake free from this, but they need to wake up to certain things.
Yeah, thank you, John, and it was nice to have you on the show, and I hope that more people will go and check out your work and more people get informed about this. Thank you, and thank you for being on the show.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, signing off. I encourage everybody to look at KGB Banker on Amazon.
Thank you for listening to The Eastern Border Show. If you have any questions or comments, go to our website, theeasternborder.lv, and leave a comment there. Or email us at theeasternborder@gmail.com. We'll be sure to answer. You can also follow us on social media and contact us there. If you enjoyed this episode, then leave us a review on Apple Podcasts and tell your friends about us. It really helps us grow the show. And remember, happiness is mandatory.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.